The theme of our service today is the grace of giving, and we want to take a look at the whole issue of our finances in church, think a little bit about how we can begin to update some of the ways that we do, some of the things that we do, and what our needs are and the targets are for the current year. You're used to seeing Brian Givens up here talking about the CAP ministry because that's Brian's full-time work now, and we have employed him as a church, and he's been running that ministry now for 4 years, and we're thankful to God for all the things that God has been doing through CAP. You also know Brian because he'll have been up here in the past number of years as Clerk of Session from time to time, fulfilling that role. He's no longer Clerk of Session. Paul Elliott's taken that over now. So because Brian has so much time in his hands, and because Deirdre's retired from work now and didn't want him hanging about the house, we decided it would be a good idea if he took on another role in the life of the church. So he volunteered to become our givings coordinator. And Brian, over the next number of years, is going to try and help us think a bit more about how we give to God, how we organize that strategically in the life of our church, and how we're going to meet the big demands that lie before us in the next 10 years or so with potential building projects, and our staffing needs and all the rest of it. Brian has taken over that role, and you're going to meet him in that role for the first time this morning. So we're going to kind of do what we're going to talk about this morning in two halves, all right? Brian's going to talk a little bit about the practicalities now, and then later in the service, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the Bible has to say about the things Brian is going to mention, okay? We're both supposed to be only doing about 15 minutes. So you can see who sticks to their brief, all right? So I'd like you to welcome Brian now as our new givings coordinator and listen carefully to what he has to say. When he's finished, then Lisa Best is going to pray for him and for the whole strategy for the next few years, and then we'll go into a time of worship before we look at God's word. Brian, you're very welcome in your new role. You don't look any different, but anyway. Oh, yeah.
How do you follow that? Thanks, John. I suppose, really, as John said earlier, we're going to mention money, and we expected a greater exit. So thank you for staying. And usually when the word money gets mentioned, you always think, if I did a straw poll, what word would go with it? Because people think, my money, or if you're married, maybe our money. And that's how people think of money. It's mine. I've actually toiled hard and long to earn this money, and I've got all these great ideas what I'm going to do with it. So the word mine is very much linked with money or our money. Maybe we should rethink that, perhaps. Does God come into the equation? Any of it his? And as we start to work through this whole strategy, maybe it starts to allow us to think differently about what we have, how God has blessed us, and how we then share in those blessings. This was highlighted last year. We, as you know, were a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, and once a year the church get together in the General Assembly in June time and look at a number of different issues. And in last year's General Assembly, this particular issue was highlighted with the banner, and this is the banner we're going with, the grace of giving. And each congregation was asked to look at that. So this is our implementation of that, in line with the vision that John presented to us last week. And when we look at that, and we look at what God has taught us from his word, and we'll be looking in more detail at that later, the words joyful and generous jump out at us. Not words which we think about when we think about money, because we're worried, it's mine, where do we get it? But if we start to think differently, because again, as we look through the Bible, all the stuff that we think humanly, God turns on his head, and he looks at things totally differently, and we see things in new light and different through different eyes as we share with him. And in that verse in Corinthians, it actually says, if we give generously, we will reap generously. So I'm going to give one or two examples of that as we go forward as well. And in the next verse, after that, it talks about being joyful in giving. So the terms joyful and generous are ones which we're going to use as we think this through as well. A couple of years ago, we did the whole questions of the Old Testament and New Testament as we looked at the E100 series, and how effectively tracing God's hand right through the Old Testament, right into the New Testament. And at that point, what we looked at was the legalistic side of the Old Testament in the early days of the Jewish blessings, and then how those were opened out with what Christ has done for us, and 2,000 years on, how we live that out. And in the Old Testament, the principle of tithing was very much seen in the whole idea of giving. But in the New Testament, it's all about generosity, how we actually think about what we give and how we're returning that based on the blessings that we have received. Again, when we talk about money, some people just close down and they say, this is too complicated, I can't get my head around it. So what we tried to do, and you've got the little leaflet today that you were given when you came in, we have a little team together now to look at this and move it forward and come up with a lot of new ideas. And the W5, people think W5 and the simple questions. So if we're to try and think it through simply and help you put it on some hooks, we go W5, who, what, why, when, where. And we're going to just prompt in those questions now and see how this plays out practically for us. So who is going to give? Well, we're all in church this morning because we believe in a sovereign God. We want, as John said to the children, to give something back of what that has been given to us. And if you think of what God has given, we enter life when God decides. We leave this earth when he decides. So we don't come in with anything. We don't go out with anything. All we have in the middle is his. We have life. We're blessed with health. And we have possessions, and some of that is money. So if we believe that all of that is from God, through God, blessed by God, then that's how we think of it. Those who are blessed are the ones that want to give back and bless others. But why then should we give? John's going to be dealing with that a lot more later. You'll see the summary of that talk in the leaflet, Why Give? But as we said earlier, the whole principle of giving is something that's been ordained right through the history of the Bible itself. That passage in Corinthians, we're looking at the chapter before it today, and these verses in generosity and joyfulness come, as you see at the back of the thing, in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 7. But in terms then of the giving, up until now, giving in church has been through, as John said, the envelope system. But as we talk to people and as we look at modern day lifestyles, that has varied quite radically from what it used to be. And what we've put together is a strategy now which should help people to identify with how their living experience actually plays out. For some people, that is more often monthly, because they get paid monthly, they're budgeting monthly, and therefore to think of giving monthly is maybe an easier approach. And we're going to be talking in detail about how that plays out in terms of standing order, etc. For some people, it may still be weekly. You're budgeting weekly, you're looking at cash, and these envelopes are a huge discipline, and over the years, we've been blessed through that system. But nowadays, what we're finding is that some people, depending on their work, are getting one-off bonuses. Some people don't have continuous work. They get some work, then they stop, then they get work again. And therefore, it's when they have money that they feel they're able at that point to give something. So therefore, it's trying to think through the timing of that. And then the other aspect which many of us are looking at in terms of creating a will, and some people are asking about, is the whole idea of legacy. This church is almost 10 years old, and at the time the church was built, those of you who were with us at that stage will remember the legacy received from the late Rita Loudon, which was £250,000. I'll touch on that just in a moment or two as well when we look at how that was distributed. And then last year, you'll see in the church accounts, the late Phyllis Davison, again, another legacy of 5,200, people leaving something in their wills to the ongoing work of the church. So then the question is how, if we're looking at it in terms of timing, how do we then play that out? What does it mean and how do we do it? Okay, this is what some of the new thinking is. And you'll see in your little leaflet that effectively it's two pages. And the idea is that the middle page is the pull-out section. And when we think of monthly giving and we think of standing orders, that's what this is. We've now created a standing order, one single standing order. Up until now, there might have been many. It's there to be completed. And that might allow you, in terms of your monthly budget, to think of a standing order. Some people say, well, I don't have a budget. And as you start to think this thing through and you start to pray it through, maybe it's time, and maybe the time is right for you to start thinking differently on money. And one of the streams of CAP, which we've talked about many times in church, is CAP money, which effectively is a budgeting course. And Jerry and Karen sit up here. And Jerry and Karen are starting the next course on Tuesday week. You'll see it in your bulletin, Tuesday the 8th. So if you think that that could be helpful to you, just to set up a budget, then sign up for that. You'll do so online on the CAP webpage. Some people I know in the past have said, oh, I meant to do that but never got around to it. Now's your opportunity. With regard to the weekly envelopes, these are still going to be part of our giving strategy. And the reason why we've got all these envelopes, which often confuse people, is the blue one is the one which is our general fund, and that's for most of the running costs of the church, the salaries that we pay, and the outreach that we do. But the point is, within the Presbyterian system, there is central taxation. Depending on how much is brought into a congregation, a percentage of that goes to run the centre of the church, but only this element of our giving, hence the confusion. If you're doing a building project, which is this one, you're allowed to do that without central taxation. If you're given to missions, that's a separate one again. And we are focusing very much on the youth in our congregation, so there's a youth development. So those are envelopes which allow people the choice of where to distribute their givings. And as such, that will continue for those who wish to do it, but we're trying to get people probably steering towards the standing order. We're launching a couple of totally new ideas today. And the first one is an online donation. Many of you have used the church website, and you'll know as you talk about other charities and other organizations that on their website is a donate button. And again, people nowadays find that a very easy method of giving to whoever they want to give to. We're launching it today, but it's not going online until 2 weeks' time, which I'll talk about as I conclude, which is our harvest day, and we're going to use it on that occasion as launching a number of issues, but today we just want to talk about the website and the donate button. And in parallel with that, again, many of you have watched on TV on a Saturday night, and you're trying to decide who wins in which competition, and you're invited to text in. Similarly, with regard to texting, nowadays, the whole idea of texting an amount is very much in play as well. So we're going to be launching that. And within your phone, you can text up to £10. So that if it's a young person, the parent's not lumbered with a bill for £1,000. So it's up to £10, and that goes onto your phone bill. And then behind the scenes, the church claims that back. And again, some people will be able to do that, others won't. But with regard to whatever method we use, the big win is the taxman. No one likes giving to the taxman. So effectively, the idea of gift aid means that whatever is given to the taxman, if you sign a little form, if you're paying tax, we as a charity, which is how the church is designated, can claim that back. So for every £100 you give, we get an extra £25 back from the taxman. So when you're filling out your standing order form, there's another form here which is called gift aid. Just sign that you're a taxpayer, and we do the rest, the administration, to make sure that the amount comes through. And finally, when we talk about legacies, there's a number of different approaches to that, and we would always advise people to discuss it with their solicitor and try and work that through. Some people give a percentage of their estate. Some people, when they've looked after their loved ones, maybe will give the residue of an estate. Some people will set a particular item of property aside and say, well, that's for the charity. So all of those have different approaches and different aspects to it. But the big thing on legacy, depending on the scale of an estate, is that the taxman also sees a charity as an organization that he will not tax. So there's 40% tax on estates if it's over a certain amount. That varies each year. But if you have a charity specified within that, that is not taxed. So there's a lot of benefits in looking at all of that. But again, speak through that with your solicitor. So that's the whole aspect of when we give, how we give. And finally, when the rubber hits the road, what should we give? I remember a while back, previous ministry, we looked at this issue, and there was a little video shown, I think, one night in our midweek, and they did a vox pop. They went around interviewing various people, and they interviewed a lady coming out of the hairdressers, and just asked her about giving and church and so on. And she said it was only then that it finally clicked with her. She had paid her hairdresser. She had given her £1 as a tip. And then when the plate came around on Sunday, she opened her purse and put £1 in the plate. And the two connected. She'd given God a tip. And in that sense, we each have to work through what it is we are giving back to God. And as we talked earlier about the principle in the Old Testament of tithing, which was 10%, if we look at how we aspire to that or we aim towards it, that's going to be difficult for many people. It's not an overnight fix of where we're at with household budgets. As you know, the other part of my work is CAP, dealing with people in very difficult situations with debt, etc. And what I would say to some people would say to me, look, I would love to give to church as well. And I said, well, look, we're on this journey. It might be 4 or 5 years or whatever time it's going to be. When we're out of that aspect of life, things will be different, and you may be able at that point then to consider giving more if that was your wish. But in the meantime, maybe you are able to give yourself, maybe some type of service. There's other ways that you can give to God as well. So just think through individually what that means for each of us and what it is we aspire to. When we look at giving generously, sometimes people think of, and we see this on TV at times, you know, it's like using God as a slot machine. If you give, you will get back. And that's not how God works. It's not material blessings that we're getting back as we give to God. It is the spiritual blessing, which we can't touch and feel. We do feel it. We do experience it. But in that sense, we don't promise, but God promises if we give generously, we will receive generously as we bless others. I've given an example in the little leaflet of what that might look like. So let's say, for example, a household income was £1,000 a month. A tenth of that, which we could aspire to, would be £100. And then people say, well, how do I divide that up? Well, there's a number of approaches. And again, this is all personal. It's all decisions that people take themselves. But because this is the local church that we're witnessing through, and we're seeing God use those within it in different ways, we would see the majority of that being directed towards the local church. And some people like to think in terms of an 80-20 rule. It's not a prescribed formula, but it's something to aspire to. But let's say out of that £100, £80 of it goes to the church, and £20, a number of people say, oh, I give to this, and I give to that, and I support this, and that's good. And therefore, whatever it is you're supporting in other ways and other charities, but thinking the majority to church. In the past, because we had the envelopes, you were choosing how you were directing, say, for example, that £80. A lot of people have said to us, why does it have to be so complicated? So what we've done in this little leaflet is to try to make it simpler. So effectively, within the standing order section, as you set that up, you have a little form here which allows you to notify the office that you've done this. And you say how much you're giving, and then the first box is a tick box, and you say, I authorize Carmoney Church to designate my gift where it is needed most on a monthly basis. Or if you don't want the church to do that, you then decide across each of the funds what way you would like it directed. General fund, building fund, mission fund, and youth development. So it means that you have a choice, but if you want to keep it simple, think of an amount and allow the finance committee to work that through depending on the need. Those are the nuts and bolts. Effectively, what I want to do today, having launched our online donate button, having launched our text, having launched our standing order, we're now going to talk about our new halls. People said, what's happening to this new halls project that effectively we kicked off a couple of years back, and there's been a period of time when we haven't done anything about it. The plans have been passed. You'll see them displayed in the vestibule. In order to do that, we've had a very generous offer from some members of our congregation who have worked with us to try and get this thing kicked off. And we've got now an offer of matched funding, £50,000 matched funding, because we need our deposit together to go to the bank. At the end of last year, we had £350,000. We would probably need in the region of £600,000 to go to the bank to fund the project, which is £2 million. So to move that forward this year, probably come up to about £400,000 in standard givings. If we have another £100,000 on top of that, there's £500,000, and that gives us something to aim to towards moving forward with this whole project. 10 years' time, next Easter, will be when we open this building. It was opened in April 2004. And the end of April is Easter in 2014. Around that time, we want to celebrate the 10th anniversary of this building and launch effectively at that stage our new project. By that stage, we believe that God will have blessed us with what we need to do that. And to do that, we're going to have our appeal for harvest targeted towards the new halls, which is why in your leaflet today, you've also got an envelope. So 2 weeks' time, we're looking for our appeal this year to kick off the matched funding of £50,000, and that will roll between now and next April. By next April, we will, with God's blessing, have £100,000 to give thanks for and to kick off the project. That may apply to organisations as well, within your organisations, because you're all going to use the new halls complex. Now is the opportunity to perhaps start the project and look to give something now to that aspect of getting the halls kicked off. That's enough from me. When we talked last week about the vision of what God has called us to in this place, we looked at three things: prayer, people, and place. And one of the big cornerstones of what we're doing and what we've seen time and time again over these last years, as God has blessed, is the whole aspect of prayer. And we wouldn't do this project without embodying it in prayer. And in the team that we've put together to run the Grace of Giving, we have Patricia, who's our new treasurer. We have Lisa, who's going to lead the prayer initiative. We have Helen Carrick, David Montgomery on the IT, and Stephen Laurie, who's going to look at some other initiatives on fundraising and bidding in other situations. So there's a whole different approach to how we're going to look at the giving that we're going to do and how God blesses that.
Well, Brian has taken a little bit of time to talk to us about the why and how of giving to our church. And I want to commend to you the booklet that you received this morning. When you come into church, please don't leave it in the pew either. Take it home with you. Have a read at it later. Prayerfully consider what that booklet is setting before you this morning. Okay. It also includes the envelope for that special appeal at harvest. I don't know if you picked up. He slipped it in really quietly on the way. Did you hear what his target is for the harvest appeal? It's £50,000. I don't know if you picked that up on the way through or not, but he said it to me the other day. I said, what? He said, yeah, that's what it is. And then he moved on as if it was a small sum. It's not. So we need serious prayerful consideration to what Brian has asked you to do this morning. I was tweeting while he was talking some of his main points through our church Twitter account. And do you know what his surname autocorrects to in iOS? It autocorrects to givings. Givens autocorrects to givings. What an inspired choice of you, Bran, as our new givings coordinator. Anyway, that's by the by. It's ridiculous. Anyway, would you please note one other thing in the booklet? This is probably the single most important thing in it, okay? What Bran is proposing in the booklet are a number of ways whereby we can give more easily according to the way in which we now earn. Many, many people earn monthly, and so the idea of a monthly standing order is the easiest way to give to church. And in the booklet, there's a form there that you can do that and you can begin to give in that way. But what's inspired about what's in the booklet is this. Loads of new people joining our church in the past 4 or 5 years, especially younger people joining the church, have said to us, what are all these envelopes for? Why do we need 4 envelopes? You know, can we not just give you the money and you decide where it's needed? Well, that's what the new system is providing you with the opportunity of doing. If you insist that you still want to say, no, I want my money to go A, B, C, and D, you can still do that. But in the booklet Brian has given you this morning, there's now the opportunity to move to a much more modern and sensible way of giving to the church. You now can give into just one fund, and you can give the church committee authority to put that money where that money is needed right now. As a church, we should only be accumulating money in one fund. That's our property fund, because we've got a big job to do. Basically, all the other funds should read zero at the end of the year. Why? You gave it to us to do mission. We need to spend it on mission. If we're not spending it on mission, we're not doing what you tell us. And the new standing order method of giving gives us the opportunity to spend that money where that money is needed now. And so that at the end of the year, it says zero in all 3 accounts, and it says £600,000 in the property account, and we can start the new building project. Okay, that's where we need to be by the end of the year, all right? So, please consider this prayerfully. This is a better way to give to church funds. If you still want to have envelopes and you still want to carve it up, you can still do that. But if you want to give and trust the people you have elected to look after the finances of the congregation, then give us the flexibility to do that, and the Lord will bless it. Please read the booklet carefully when you get the chance later. I know that sometimes when we talk about money in church, and I rarely talk about money in church, I try not to as far as possible, but I know that when I do, we, and sometimes me too, feel resentful or even angry about giving being a part of Christian worship, all right? We've got loads of commitments, loads of responsibilities. We live in a difficult day when money is worth less than it was, when our salaries don't go as far as they used to, when we have increasing commitments ourselves, and now the church is asking us to give more. And we can resent that, and we can feel angry about it. But actually, part of our hearts also knows, as Bram was pointing out a moment or two ago, that this is right. It's right that we should give to the Lord. But knowing what is right isn't the same thing as doing it. And that's exactly the position the Corinthian church was in when Paul wrote both his letters to them. They're 2 of the longest letters in the New Testament, 1 and 2 Corinthians. And in both of those letters, Paul deals with the issue of giving, because in the Corinthian church, everybody knew it was right, but not everybody was doing it. And so Paul writes to them, and in the letters, he covers a lot of ground. Things that we take for granted, that we understand are part of our Christian faith and way of life, come from what Paul says in these letters. For example, in these letters, he establishes the principle of regular giving. Just as he had told the Galatians. In 1 Corinthians 16:2, it says, on the first day of the week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up, so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. This was a day in which people were paid weekly rather than monthly. So Paul says, every week, when you get your pay, set aside a sum for the use of the Lord. Basic principle of regular giving. Also in these letters, he teaches us how to assess the value of our offering. And when we look at what Paul has to say, it turns out that in the Presbyterian church, we manage to count the wrong thing. We count the wrong thing. We count the money people give. That isn't a significant amount. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 12, the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. We count what we give when we should count what we have left after we've given. That's the point. He learned this from Jesus. You remember in the temple, watching the people casting in their offerings, and the widow who casts in so tiny an offering, you could hardly count it. It was 2 of the smallest coins that there were. And Jesus said her offering was worth more than all the others. How could he say that? Because of what she had left when she gave. All the others had far more left than they had given. When she gave, she had nothing left. Therefore, her gift was of more value to God than all the other gifts put together. We count what we give. God counts what we have left. That principle is established in. So if you want to know how valuable your offering is to God, how much have you left when you've given it? And thirdly, he reminds us that we can never outgive God, no matter how much we give. He says in 2 Corinthians 9:15, "Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift." We can never outgive God, no matter how much we give. Do you remember, if you were here yesterday, the quotation that Marashina Stanfield gave us from Josh McDowell? He says this: "If you ever had to put a price tag on yourself, it would have to read Jesus. You are worth Jesus to God. That is what he paid for you. And no gift I ever give will come close to that." So there's so much to learn from these letters about giving. Please spend a little bit of time reading them if you have. Read Rand's booklet by all means, but read 1 and 2 Corinthians as well. You'll find God has got lots to say to us about giving in those letters. But it's not to arguments, however true or persuasive, that Paul turns to provide the Corinthian Christians with much needed motivation. Okay? He doesn't start a whole long diatribe, you know, listing really good reasons why you should give and how much better you'll feel after you give and all that kind of thing. He doesn't do that. What does he do? Paul turns to an example. He reminds them of a story that they already knew. Not only did they know it, but everybody knew it. It was the story of the generosity of the Macedonian Christians. This is what Paul says about them. "In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity." How was this possible? These people had nothing. These people were in trouble because they were believers in the culture in which they lived in Macedonia. How come that they gave so generously? And Paul goes to tell us the secret. Here's the secret. They gave themselves, first of all, to the Lord, and then by the will of God, also to us. It turns out that Christian giving is not first and foremost about money at all. And it's only when we give what God asks that we will be able to give money as well. Because giving is first of all about giving ourselves. And Paul says we give ourselves in two directions. First of all, we give ourselves to God. Giving things can be a subtle or not so subtle deception. For example, why do I go to Tesco's and buy flowers to give to my wife? Why do I do that? Well, I could say I do that to express the depth of my undying love, which I have, but I could also do it because I know I need to do something tomorrow which clashes with something else we've already arranged to do, and if I give her flowers, she might let me off lightly. You would never have done that, of course, but sometimes when we give to other people, it's a form of deception. You know, why do we give an extravagant birthday present to someone? Why do we pay people careful attention? Sometimes it's not because we want to bless the person, but because we want that person to bless us. We want cash back. You know, sometimes when you take your card into the shops now and you pay for something and they say, "Do you want cash back?" And sometimes when we give people to others, we want cash back. We give to them to bless them, yes, but we want them to bless us. So our gifts can sometimes be an elaborate form of manipulation and selfishness. What looks like generosity is actually me looking after myself. The problem is that this strategy might work with human beings till you get found out. But it doesn't work with God, because God isn't interested in my money. God isn't interested in my money. He wants me. He wants me. But he wants me to give freely and openly to him. That's amazing. God doesn't want my money. God doesn't need my money. I'll come back to that in a minute. But he enables me to give to him, to give. That is in such contrast to every other authority that we experience in life, because every other authority doesn't invite us to give. They demand our attention. They demand our attention. The government doesn't give you an option about paying tax. It just says, "Thank you very much," and takes it out of your pay packet before you even get it. God doesn't do that. God invites us to give to him. He's not like human authorities who just demand and take. I met Gillian Laney during the week, and we were chatting about her experience in the summertime of her visit to the DR Congo to visit the Christian Aid Project there, and she was telling me a bit about the project. She's going to be attending church about it in a little while. It's an amazing story of how a small woman's cooperative is changing society in the DR Congo through doing really very simple things. But when they started the woman's cooperative up, and it gradually developed into basically a community business, one of the problems was that they had to work in a difficult environment where you can't even get a receipt for anything. So how do you account for stuff? And opening bank accounts was virtually unheard of. And whenever the women's cooperative initially did open the bank account and put the money in it, the local tribal chief said, "That money belongs to me because I'm the tribal chief and everything in this area belongs to me." That's human authority. Human authority takes things. They had to negotiate and explain to the tribal chief that no, he couldn't go down to the bank and take all the money out. It didn't actually belong to him. But that's what human authority does. It takes and demands. It's not what God does. It's not what God does. Everything is the Lord's. The 50th Psalm says this: "Listen, my people, and I will speak. I will testify against you, Israel. I am God, your God. I bring no charges against you concerning your sacrifices or concerning your burnt offerings, which are ever before me. I have no need of a bull from your stall or goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine and the cattle on a thousand hills. I know every bird in the mountains and the insects in the fields are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and all that is in it." This God has everything he needs. There isn't anything I can give him that will enrich him. He just wants us. And so we do not face a demand from God that says, "You must do this." Instead, we face an invitation to give. To give ourselves to him. You know, when I was a boy, I used to love it when my dad said to me, "I'm going to preach in such and such a place tonight. Would you like to come with me?" And I always loved to go when he asked me to go. Okay, so I was a geek from when I was young, fine. But when he asked me to go, I always wanted to go. Why did I want to go? Well, not for the ride in the car. I could go for a ride in the car, my dad, anytime, even though I love going for rides in the car. Nor did I want to go with him for the terrible meetings he was frequently going to preach at. I mean, they used to go to preach at this little mission hall not far outside the city of Derry, and it was truly horrendous. There was an elderly gentleman who was also an elder in our congregation, and I always ended up sitting in the row behind him. And when he sang, he didn't actually sing. He kind of shouted vaguely in key. And it was truly horrendous. And for a young boy sitting there, it was awful. All right? So I didn't go for the meetings either because they weren't that exciting. And I didn't go as well to get let off doing some chores that I would have had to do around the house if it wasn't in the car at the meeting with my dad. Why did I go? I went because in the invitation to go with him to the meeting, he was giving me himself and inviting me to give myself to him. Because that's what it was really about. It was like a son sharing with his dad. You know, I'm looking at Carl and Tyler up here this morning. You know, the dad on the bass, the son on the electric guitar. What an amazing thing it is, you know, just to give yourselves to one another in the service of God. That's why I love to go in the car with my dad. Because he was giving himself to me. He was providing me to spend time with him, doing something that was really important to him. And so I responded in kind and said, "Yeah, I want to go." And this is the essence of Christian giving, even at 8 years of age, which I probably was then. That's the essence of Christian giving. It's not about my money. It's not about what I possess, because God doesn't need any of that. It's about him giving himself to me and me giving myself to him in response. It's like Paul declared on that occasion in the boat when he was about to be shipwrecked and he was trying to encourage the other sailors about what God's promise was in Acts chapter 27. And how does he describe that God? He talks about a God whose I am and whom I serve. This is a God who gave himself to me, so now I have given myself to him. Christian giving is about giving ourselves to God. If we don't give ourselves, we'll never give money. If we hold back the lordship and masterhood of our lives, we will never give money. But if we give ourselves to God, we will give everything. We will give everything. We are called to give ourselves to God, but then we're also called to give ourselves to each other. If God doesn't need our possessions, why is Brian launching a giving strategy today? Okay, why don't we just all forget about the offering, put our money back in our wallets and go home after the service is over, okay? Why don't we do that? Because God doesn't need it. Isn't that what I just said? So if he doesn't need it then, that's fine. That's more money for me to spend on whatever. Well, you see, it turns out that in the Judeo-Christian tradition, giving was never for the Lord's benefit. We don't give to God to benefit him. Our giving can't possibly benefit him. We give to God to benefit people. So, for example, in the Old Testament, whenever it would come to making an offering or sacrifice in the temple, people would bring grain, they would bring wine, they would bring new oil, they would bring animals of various kinds or birds, and those things would be sacrificed. And I kind of think that when we imagine that happening, we imagine all this stuff being brought and either burned in the fire or destroyed in some way and sacrificed to God. But the things weren't brought to give to God. Okay? Well, if they weren't given to God then, to whom were they given? Well, at special festivals, at particular times of the year when people brought their offerings up of grain and wine and new oil and animals for sacrifice, at the special festivals, the people who brought the offerings ate the food. A small portion of it was offered in sacrifice to God on the altar or by whatever means was prescribed for the gift that you were making. The rest of the gift, you ate yourself. It was part of the celebration. God said, bring all this stuff together and we'll have a great celebration and you will eat and enjoy it and I'll be present with you and we'll have a great party. So when you brought the stuff, you and your children, your family ate the food. And when you brought other sacrifices, the regular sacrifices at other times of the year, especially the sacrifices of meat, which would be an animal from your flock, and you brought that and that was sacrificed to God, what was sacrificed to God? Actually, just the blood of the animal that was spilled out, and some of it, the inedible parts of the animal, but all the meat of the animal that could be eaten was given to the priest to keep the priest and his family alive. The offering that you brought to God was given to people. The food fed people. It wasn't burned and wasted on the altar. It fed the priestly families. They had no land. They were given no inheritance in Israel. Their inheritance was the givings of the people to God. They gave it to God, and it fed and kept the priests and their families. And in the writings of Paul, giving to the Lord is often in the form of giving to support his people. Paul talks about this in his own case, for example, and when he's writing to the Philippians, he's talking about how he has really been blessed. He says this, I am amply supplied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. This is kind of an interesting verse. Paul says, I was in need. I don't have anything. And then Epaphroditus arrived with gifts from you. It was probably money. Maybe there was some food, maybe some clothing in there, some things they knew Paul needed. This is Paul's personal needs. Paul was in prison here. He wasn't establishing a new ministry somewhere. He had needs, and they sent to him to meet his needs. And Paul said, it's amazing. I don't need anything now. And then he says this, what you did in giving to me was a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. Who got the benefit of the money and the clothes and the food that the Philippians sent through Epaphroditus? Not God. He didn't need them. They were offered to God, but it was Paul who was blessed by the offering.